Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dynamic Dojo Show with Restita and Robert, your source for martial arts talk radio.
3, 2, 1, we're live.
Dynamic Dojo Radio Show, and I'm joined here at the helm with, I was going to call you Grandmaster. I don't know why.
God,
Robert Deal. I have no idea where that came from. I think it was a habit from yesterday. Everybody was a Grandmaster at a tournament that I went to, and yeah. So listeners, welcome to the Dynamic Dojo. So tonight is open mic night. So this is our rant, raven, rap show. So feel free to call in, join the discussion. Just call in to say hi. Tell us about your upcoming seminars, events, what have you. Call in to rant about something, complain about something, rave about something, anything. This is like open mic night. So anyhow, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. And yes, Bob.
And you know, the code for us saying is open mic night, rant, raven, rap show is we didn't have time to plan anything this week.
Yeah. Yeah. So when the go-to thing is if we, you know, don't have any guests that are scheduled or they can't make it to a show, we just do rant, raven, rap, or we think about some other thing. But, you know, it's been at least 3 months since we've had a rant, raven, rap, so this ought to be fun. So, again, listeners, 347-677-0699. Call in and join the fun. Talk about anything you want. And talk up your school, even. Tell us about your dojo, the whole nine yards. All right.
Oh, absolutely. That would be really cool. Now, the entertainment field, of course, suffered a loss today. He hasn't been really, really active, and it wasn't really emotional for me. It was emotional when Carol O'Connor died because I was at his house. I was at Andy Griffith's house before, met his wife, met him, knew him really well. Mm-hmm. People like that, when you have a connection with people that you've done work for that are really cool to you, you know, there's a connection. It's really emotional. So they lost Misas Taylor from the old Designing Women TV series in the late 80s.
What?
Yeah. Anthony Bouvet, he passed away from a long-time battle with cancer at the age.
No.
Now, I didn't think he was this old. He was actually 67.
Yeah. He never looked his age. Wow,
no,
I had no idea that he was, you know, battling cancer. Oh, my God. R.I.P. That's sad.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Oh, wow. All right, time to like sit up now and get rid of the long face. Oh man.
Well, yeah, it reminds me of that old joke where the bartender say the horse that walked into his bar.
Why the long face? That's funny. I mean, it's old, but you know, it's a classic, so
yeah,
it gets a rim shot. Oh my goodness. Now, speaking of jokes, did you see that one video joke that I put on my Facebook?
I'm not sure.
Speaking
which
of bartender, I'll have to put it on the Dynamic Dojo Show. I'll do it. It's a hilarious joke, but it's not safe for work. I guess it's not safe for kids. It's yeah, it's not safe for work because it's got like a bunch of cuss words in it. But it's pretty funny. I'll put it on the Dynamic Dojo Show here on a page in a little bit. Anyhow, let's get on with the show before we get into open mic. So we'll start our open mic after our usual first segment, listeners. So, but feel free to call in and join us for the first segment because it's usually pretty fun. 347-677-0699. All right. So let's get started with birthdays. What do we have for birthdays?
Okay. Well, the first one, I hope to get him on our show. He said he was going to do it. Grandmaster Mike Stone.
Right on.
Next one is somebody who actually has a show on our network. Kim's Intentional Movement. Kimberly Canales, her birthday is 6:30 tomorrow.
Woo-hoo!
A good friend, Lynn Jacoby, the wife of Scott Jacoby, which is my son's martial arts instructor. Her birthday is on the 1st. Past guests, actually next three have been past guests in the show or have been on the show. John Krang, actor, stuntman, stand-up comedian, his birthday is on the 2nd.
Right on.
A really good friend of the show and a good personal friend, Alan Woodman. His birthday is on Independence Day, the 4th of July. Now, the next one, you and I had this discussion. We don't know which way it is. Master Ken, his birthday is on July 4th as well. I don't know if that's the birthday of Ameridote, which would make sense, like you said, or if that is his actual birthday.
Yeah,
so
I don't know.
To everybody.
Yeah, happy birthday to everybody. And that's for the week of June 29th through July, what is it, July 5th. Oh, wow, July 4th falls on a Friday. Awesome. So this happy birthday tune is for all of you.
Happy birthday to you.
National holiday week at that. Very cool. Happy birthday to everyone. All right, let's get on with the show. So let's do some shout outs. Now, usually what I do is I look through my personal calendar, and so does Bob. And Bob and I also look through our Facebook calendar. So I got to mention this event because because I thought it was pretty funny. Let me go back and see if I can find it.
I want to know, because I know what's coming up. Was this on your personal calendar or your Facebook?
It was on my Facebook, upcoming events. Today, there is actually a Muay Thai seminar. This is all in Spanish, so I have no idea. But I'll go ahead and announce it anyway. Let's see if I can translate any of this. No, I can't. I can't. Yeah, but it's today, and it's in the basketball court at the Manuel Gomez Jimenez de la Paz, and it's taught by Professor Miguel Azteca, and that's all I can figure out. That's all I can make out. Now, you know, and then that goes against the stereotype about my name. Every time people see my name, they just assume I can speak Spanish. And I still get stuff in the snail mail that are all in Spanish. And I'm like, oh, I see how it goes. All right. So today also going on is a seminar at a North Hollywood private residence. And it's and it's
now when you said North Hollywood, that's like by me.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the address?
It's Pole Dancing for Consciousness, and it says, awaken your sexualness and unleash your magnificence to the world. Using the tools of access consciousness and the magic of you, your body and the pole, we will dance our way into all the limitations that are holding you back from being the sexualness you can truly be, and then we will blast them out of this reality so you can create the life you know is possible.
Wow, pole dancing for consciousness, really? Every time I see a pole dancer, I know I'm conscious. at least part of me is.
Well, you know, if you really want to go catch I think it's over. Yeah, because it started at 11 a.m. It would have cost you $250 to gain some consciousness. Anyway, I
could have gone to see some real shrimp, some real pole dancing for that.
Now, normally I get a lot of stuff that's not like this, but I get a lot of stuff for like consciousness work and stuff like that, like Reiki and stuff like that, because I am a Reiki practitioner. But that one just like flew out at me, and I'm like, really, pole dancing for consciousness? That's awesome. Oh, you know, I also want to give a shout out as far as birthdays to a couple of great friends of mine. I want to send a shout out to Jeff Myers. He's the father of one of my Mighty Might students, Lilica. And his birthday is today. He's 48 years old, same age as me. And one of my great friends from the Dakotas, who used to live out here, I worked with her for years at Shakey's Pizza Parlor. I want to say happy birthday to Dawn Red Bear. Happy birthday, Donnie. And another great, I call him a family member because technically he's related to my business partner, Cheryl, as an in-law. It's Tom Crawford is Cheryl's brother-in-law, and he just turned 40. He just turned the 4 decades, so happy birthday, Tom. So anyway, I just realized that was your birthday. So other upcoming events on my end, we've got, as usual, on Thursdays, we've got Violet Reiki Radio. Speaking of Reiki, her show, I just want to send a shout-out about her as well. Her show is every Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific time, and it's about all things Reiki and spiritual related. So, you know, check that out if you're into consciousness medicine and spirituality and stuff. And then, of course, July 4th, that's all I've got for shout-outs. What about you, Bob?
Well, mine are mostly for the Mars Watch System Museum in Burbank at 2913 West Magnolia Boulevard in beautiful, it's not really downtown Burbank, it is uptown. And on July 19th, they're going to have a special day for Donnie Williams.
Wow.
To commemorate his life on the 26th. This is going to be a really cool one. I've got some people coming out for that, I'm sure Michelle Mann will be there. I know Michael Rivera will be there. And it's going to be, on, like I said, on the 26th of July. And it's Solomon Kowalu Day. And that's going to
very
cool. And, of course, September 6th is going to be the Martial Arts System Museum Honor Society Award. You're coming in. We've got Lisa King told me she's going to make it. I believe Robert Parham was also coming in, both of them Masters Hall of Fame ambassadors. I tried to call Robert, but his voicemail is full to confirm. He said on Facebook he was coming, so it's going to be a good time. I think Dan Hecht will be there.
Cool.
Kiyoki, a bunch of people we know and are good friends, personal friends, and good friends of the show. And, of course,
very
August
cool.
1st, in conjunction with the 50th anniversary of the Long Beach International Karate Tournament, we are going to have the Masters Hall of Fame.
Woo!
And on the 2nd, of course, now I'm opening up my schedule right now to see where it is. Let's see, seminar schedule, there it is. On August 2nd at the Masters Hall of Fame, we are going to have seminars, which will be included in the master's dinner. You just have to show up for the seminars, and they're absolutely free of charge to the attendees of the master's. We're going to have Mike Sandoz at 8 o'clock teaching combative kung fu. 9:15, Mark Shui is going to teach Kane Masters, Kane System. 10:30, we're going to have Jacob Bressler teaching Kapok. 11:45, we're going to have Michelle Manu teaching boy, when did I learn how to stutter like that?
Me.
Lua, weapon, and open hand technique. Fight me. 1 o'clock, Robert Parham going to be teaching kickboxing. 2:15, Darren Tabone going to be teaching Serrata Escrima. And 3:30, Sifu Restita is going to be teaching blending of the arts, concepts to combat.
Cool.
There
you
go.
That's going to be a long day for everybody.
Oh, yeah. Well, now they just confirmed that it looks like Mike Stone may be at this Masters along with Karen Shepard. And
cool.
They confirmed Cynthia Rothrock, which probably means that Don Wilson's probably also going to be there. Master Ken is going to be a guest, and Ed Parker is going to be the keynote speaker, Ed Parker Jr.
Very cool.
It's going to be a very cool night. It's one not to miss. It's going to sell out like it has for the last 4 years.
Exactly, and it always sells out closer to the time. So, you know, it wasn't like the last couple of years that tickets just went boom within the last week, just like out the door.
The last week, you're absolutely right. It's the last week. Everybody waits for the last minute where there is no time to send out the tickets where they've got to put them at the door for them.
Yeah.
But that's the way it goes. Last time we had it in Long Beach. Now, this year it's at the the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Long Beach. Mm-hmm. Last time we had it at the Long Beach Convention Center,
mm-hmm.
and I think we had right around 500 people that year.
Wow.
Personally don't like them when they're that big because you can't hear yourself talk. But
it kind of depends on the social manners of everyone. Because it's, you know, like, it's one thing, like with the, was it the year after I was inducted? I forget. But like when the Tyco drummers were there, right? I mean, people were walking around and stuff trying to talk to each other while people are performing. And, you know, call me old-fashioned or whatever, but, you know, I look at it like going to the opera. You're not going to get up and start talking to people when people are performing on stage. And, you know, what makes this any different? But that's just me. You know, I realize that, you know, the Masters Hall of Fame and other events like that are probably the only time old friends get to see each other. So I don't blame anyone. It's just that it's hard to do when you've got drums.
Oh, I know, but look, and you're right. Look at the amount of people like Lisa, the Blackwood King, Robert Parham, Mark Schuette. These people we see once a year. That's it. This time, because the Honor Society, we're going to see them twice a year, or twice this year at least. We have to go up to Vegas or Fairfield. None of the ambassadors live close to me outside of Alfred or Tita.
Yeah. And it's and I guess it's just another shout out to Facebook for keeping everyone connected and stuff. I mean, I'll tout Facebook till the cows come home because, you know, I was paying like, I don't know, out the Yahoo for classmates.com. You know, that website where you, you know, where you have to, I mean, you can find people and stuff like that, but you have to pay to be able to email people and stuff. And I was doing that for a few years and it kept taking money out of my account every year or every month if you chose the month. And I went, that's not going to work. But I found more people on Facebook than I had on classmates.com. And, you know, So, I mean, I'm not saying anything bad about classmates.com. It's just that I like Facebook for that, and that's how I found out about our 30-year reunion for my high school. So that's gonna be fun
and
too.
Honestly, you know, people like you and Robert and Lisa and all these people, I've made some really good friends because of Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, kids always give me crap for it because it's like you've got 5,000 friends, but how many of those do you actually know? You know, I bet it's grown to about 250 people.
Yeah. That's about what I'm looking at, you know, with the martial arts and Reiki and bullwhips and blowguns and stuff like that. I'm around the same, like almost 300 people that I actually know, and everyone else is people that I recognize and just actually, you know, acquaint with myself with, you know. But as far as like, in my high school class, so I guess it's like closer to 400, but. You know, but everybody else is people I've never met yet. So, but I hope to change that, you know. So, yay, shout out to Facebook for that. All right. Let's see. Do I have any more shout outs? Well, I don't have any more shout outs. Do you for now?
No, I think that was it for me. You know, we've got a big push on to the Masters for the next, of course, 5 shows because that's all we've got left. And we're going to try to have some inductees on the show and then be able to congratulate them for their accomplishment, welcome them to the Masters, and talk to them about their background. That's going to be pretty cool. Once the Masters gives me a list of inductees, we can start contacting them. I'm on the show.
Yeah, that would be cool. Awesome. Well, then let's move on to health news. All right, this is not exactly health news. Oh, I guess it could be. It could be health news or health tips. It's more of a safety tip. Now, you know, July 4th is coming up real quick, and I know people hear this all the time, but I'm just going to bring it up anyway because I think it's important, and it's about fireworks and firework-related injuries. Now, those kind of injuries are the most common on July 4th and New Year's Eve, and sometimes afterwards. Here in my neighborhood, people are still setting off fireworks on the 5th and the 6th just to get rid of them.
Right, right.
And, you know, everyone knows that fireworks can cause possible death and definitely injury, including burns and bruises, lacerations, and gosh forbid, foreign objects in the eye. And making the choice to protect yourself and your family and friends from fireworks injuries is something that we want to actually make a choice to do. Sometimes, though, in the joyousness of the holidays or the joyousness of the five beers that you might have had, sometimes we forget about these things. So tip number one, never allow young children to play with or ignite fireworks on their own. Now, one time, this was years ago, I was driving down the street trying to make it home before it got dark and people started setting off fireworks in the street in my neighborhood. And I actually saw a kid, it couldn't have been more than 6 years old, lighting a bottle rocket all by himself. And there's his parents just sitting in a lawn chair. And I was like, what the heck? And I actually stopped my car, rolled down my window, and I said, you think he should be doing that himself? And, he's got plenty of experience. And, you know, I was given that look like, mind your own freaking business. And I was like, okay, whatever. You know, I better not hear sirens coming through here, you know. So, yeah, never allow young children to play with or ignite fireworks. And a lot of people think that sparklers are safe, but you'd be surprised at where those kids hold those fireworks. So those sparklers, they'll hold them near their eyes. Some people will put it in their mouth. So, you know, and even if they don't light them, you know, they'll suck on them, okay, because it's a stick and it looks like those candies that you dip in that candy powder and lick. So, you know, don't let them play with fire. Don't let them play with the sparklers either. Okay. Number two, always have an adult supervise fireworks activities. Number three, the important one, avoid buying fireworks packaged in brown paper, which often means they were made for a professional and made for professional displays and could be dangerous for consumers. Next one, make sure you, your kids, and others watch fireworks displays from a safe distance. Don't hover over that bottle rocket after you light it, folks, unless you want to lose an eye. All right, and last but not least, call 911 immediately if someone is injured from fireworks, and that includes what you think might be just a simple burn. Because what looks like a simple, like, first or second degree burn can probably be a third or fourth degree burn. Yeah, it'll develop into one, you know, especially third and fourth degree burns, because at that point it destroys the nerve, so you can't feel pain. So, you know, just call 911. Be cautious. So that's it for my safety tip for the 4th of July.
Well, I have some ads, though. Don't do something stupid and fire off handguns or anything else, because a lot of people fire them off in the air, and guess what? Because of Sir Isaac Newton, he has proven what goes up must come down.
That's right. That's right.
And it may not be directly next to you. It may be miles away that bullet, that round from that weapon end up killing somebody. Play safe, don't be stupid.
Yeah, I read this story once about some guy like 3 miles away from a situation like that where someone just fired in the air. 3 miles away, it was a guy that was celebrating his engagement to his fiancée. And they were actually, it was like literally like just minutes afterwards, and they were celebrating it. They were having dinner and blah, blah, blah. And then broop, he just fell over. They were eating outside, and he just slumped over. It turns out that a bullet from that event where someone shot in the air sailed 3 miles and came down and hit him in the back of the head. Doink! Well, I guess the back of the top of his head, and died. So, you
wow.
know, can you imagine that? You know, here's this, you know, lady that just got asked to be married to her dream guy and broop, falls dead in front of her. And I would be beyond, I would just be beyond pissed and grief-stricken and, you know, it's so, yeah, be safe, people. Don't be stupid. All right.
Yeah,
so,
usually women don't wish harm on their husband until later on.
Yeah, and most likely they'll hold the gun themselves.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, and don't drink and drive, folks. You know, if you're gonna drink, stay home, be safe. And if you're gonna light off fireworks, you know, have a designated lighter. I'm serious. Have a designated lighter. You know, don't try to light off fireworks when you're drunk, because you know then things start turning into, well, let's see who can hold the black cat the longest, and then it blows up in your hand. All right.
Exactly. And make sure they're legal. There's not too many places in SoCal that are even legal anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, do people go to the reservations over there to buy illegal fireworks?
Oh, I'm sure they do. See, any
yeah.
reservation near me is not really near me. It's at least an hour and a half for me.
Oh.
But there are certain cities, like the city of San Fernando, when it became illegal, you could go up and up there, which is about 10 miles from me, and buy as many fireworks as you want.
Yeah.
I mean, in the 70s, the city of Burbank was legal.
Oh, okay. Yeah, in Seattle proper, they're illegal. I'm not quite sure what it is over here in South King County and in my city, Kent, but it's only like 30 minutes to get to the nearest reservation. We just, you know, hop on the State Route 167 and head over to the Muckleshoot Reservation, and boom, you can get, literally, boom, you can get like a bunch of fireworks over there. And they say that if you take them off of the reservation, it becomes illegal and you're supposed to set them off there at the reservation. But who does that? People just bring them over here to South King County where we hardly ever have burn bans in the summer or anything like that. And they just set them off. And, you know, every 4th of July, I have to, number one, mow the lawn, two, water the whole lawn. And I've got a whole bunch of lawn, and that's kind of a pain in the butt to water this whole lawn. Water the roof, you know.
Right.
Somebody said to put a sprinkler up there, because that's what I always worry about. And because, you know, I remember, like, last year, I was sitting on my balcony watching the fireworks, you know, so I had my beer and my dinner, and I kept hearing it. I kept hearing rockets hit the roof of the house. And I'm leaning over the balcony watching one set of fireworks, and dunk, something hit me in the head. And I'm like, are you serious? You know, something fell down and hit me in the head. And I'm like, oh, really? The next morning I woke up and there was just a whole bunch of debris in my backyard. And I'm like, thank God none of this, you know, set my dry lawn on fire, because that would that would have sucked. Oh, all
yeah.
right. So be safe, everyone. All right, let's move on to the weird news.
Weird news.
All right.
Okay. This weird news comes from St. Petersburg, Florida. The beach is a place for surf, sun, and sand, not for making mess.
What?
However, yeah. Oh, this gets a lot weirder. However, a man in St. Petersburg, Florida is facing charges after allegedly cooking up meth in his truck in Gondi Beach. Charles J. Tapp, 24, was arrested June 14th after deputies in Pinellas County noticed a dark-colored Chevy Silverado parked along the beach's tree line. Tapp was in the truck, as were several needles. An investigation of the vehicle turned up other items that indicated the suspect was making meth in it, WTSPTV reports. Tapp was arrested on charges of possessing meth and unlawful possession of, help me out with that word, Rusty.
Pseudoephedrine.
Pseudoephedrine. Thank you. Yes. And hydrochloric gas.
In his truck?
In a truck with an explodable gas tank attached to it.
What an idiot. And that's not counting the gas tank underneath him in the truck.
Yes. And he's fucking mad.
What an idiot.
What happened with the fire?
Yeah, right?
No, okay.
Oh, gosh.
Let's see. And, you know, all these chemicals are the chemicals used to make meth. You put them together, you put them in front of a jury, they're going to say, these are the chemicals used to make meth. Guess what? You were making meth. So, police said that Chap admitted to manufacturing meth during questioning, according to the Tampa Bay Times. He was taken to the Pinellas County Jail and later released on $10,000 bail, according to the jail's website.
Mm.
Wow, what a moron.
I know, right? Wow, that's weird. So that's weird news. Oh, hey, you know what?
That
we have a caller.
News.
Let's go take this call. Yeah, we have a caller. Let's see here. Let's see if they want to talk to us. Area code 719. You're on Dynamic Dojo. Who are we speaking with?
Dan Harmon.
Hey, Dan, how you doing?
I've been busy out of my mind. I mean, I got a company that manufactures sparring gear. They want to use me as the face for their company. So,
really?
You know, yeah, things are picking up. Things are getting insane. So
That's cool, though. So I guess it's good to be busy like that. So for our listeners out there,
I just pitched you with more money.
Yeah.
Don't we all?
Don't we all? That's right.
I need money.
Well, it's good to have you joining us for this fun evening, and we're going to finish up our first segment. So please join in on the discussion for our first segment, and then we're going to open the mic up for some. For some open discussion. Now, for our listeners out there that are not familiar with Mr. Dan Harmon, Grandmaster Harmon is a Kogaru Ninjutsu practitioner. And great guy. Love him to death. Great friend on Facebook. I hope to actually meet you in person one of these days.
Oh, I'm hoping to meet you too.
Yeah. You know, next time I'm in, wait, I'm trying to remember where you're at. Colorado. Right?
Yep, Colorado.
Okay. If I'm ever in Colorado, because that's on my bucket list. I've got some other Facebook friends that I want to meet finally. So if I'm ever in Colorado, I'll be sure to look you up. So anyway, we've got Grandmaster Dan Harmon joining us. What was that?
Hopefully when you do come down, it'll be in October, because then I can take you to Manitou Springs, because I have this really cool thing that they do in Manitou called the Coffin Run. They make go-karts that are shaped like coffins, and they race them down the hill of the main street of Manitou.
I would so watch that. I would.
Absolutely.
And hopefully no one ends up in the coffin at the end of the race. I would so watch that. That's awesome. Awesome. All right. So, yeah, weird news. Some guy cooking meth in his truck. What an idiot. So let's move on to the... Yeah, at a beach. Yeah. So let's have Bob move on to the entertainment news. All right. What do we got for entertainment news?
This is a guy who claims that he is no longer famous.
Okay.
He did a bunch of movies, and he says he's not famous anymore. Well, this is Shia LaBeouf.
Shia
LaBeouf got crazy way before going to Studio 54 Thursday night. He was caught with his pants down last month outside a restaurant in Los Angeles, which is why he's now banned for life.
Which is why what? I'm sorry.
Which is why he is now banned for life from this restaurant, because he exposed himself. I don't know if he exposed himself. This says he dropped his pants.
Exposed something.
Shia hit up the local peasant in Sherman Oaks, which is about 5 miles from me, during his 4-hour visit. LaBeouf meandered to the back of the restaurant, and the manager got suspicious. Eyewitnesses tell us the manager followed Shia to the parking lot, where he saw the actor peeing on the wall. So he called LaBeouf out. Shia profusely apologized in an odd rant. LaBeouf wasn't done. He went back inside and tried ordering food, but the manager had enough and told Shia to get out. The two had words. Shia paid his tab and stormed out, vowing never to return. The restaurant tells us the feeling is mutual. Shia is officially persona non grata.
Oh, my God. So he's been 86 out of there for good.
Yep. I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's me because I always thought restaurants, had bathrooms.
That's what I thought, too. Why didn't he just go to the bathroom?
I know.
Why did he have to go through the back and start peeing on the back wall? It's kind of like.
And why would the manager follow him? Why was it suspicious enough for the manager to be right behind him and wonder what he was doing?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like if all he did was, I don't know. I mean, if he walked all the way to the back where the bathrooms were, that's one thing. But to go all the way out to the back door and not really do anything, I'd probably go, what's going on? You know, and Mr. LeBeau, you know, would you like something to eat? Oh, what? You're peeing on my wall. What's going on?
Exactly. Well, Mr. Peabody, it's time for the Wayback Machine.
It is. So let's turn on the Wayback Machine. All right. Wayback Machine is on, and it's taken us to June 25th, 1876. So on this day in 1876, General George Custer led the attack by the 7th Regiment of the U.S. Cavalry against a gathering of Native Americans on the banks of Little Bighorn River in southern Montana. The now legendary Native American chief Crazy Horse led his own warriors in a counterattack in which Custer and all of the 197 troops under his command were killed. This remains the greatest victory by Native Americans against what they saw as the invading forces of the U.S. Army. Wow. And that was our stop in the Wayback Machine. Let's turn it off. All right. So let's do this real quick before we open the mic. And again, we've got Grandmaster Dan Harmon joining us. And we're going to have a fun discussion about anything and everything. I know I've got a couple things to announce, and I'd like to hear about any other events that you might have, Grandmaster Harmon, and any other events that Bob wants to talk about. But let's do this real quick. I'm sorry, Bob, did you start to say something?
No.
Oh, okay. Jim, that must be me getting feedback. But let's do this real quick. Let's go ahead and take a short break, maybe about 4 minutes, give us a time to do a seventh inning stretch, and we'll be right back after this, and we'll do our open mic discussion in about 4 minutes. See you in a little bit.
Hey, MMA fighter Jason Mayhem Miller here. School bullying and cyberbullying statistics are increasingly viewed as an important contributor to youth violence, including homicide and suicide. Let's kick bullying together. Go to WeKickingIt.com.
This is Annie Lennox of Eurythmics, or RAD. Please don't drink and drive, and don't drive if someone else has been drinking. Thank you.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
This is Nnamdi Asamoah. I play football for the Philadelphia Eagles, but what I do off the field with United Way might be more important. I'm a volunteer tutor and mentor. Why? Because over a million kids a year drop out of school, and that's not okay. It takes 12 years to create a graduate, but it takes about the same time to create a dropout. And the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be me, or it could be you. Studies show that if we get to these kids earlier, their chances are better, and kids who read well by third grade are more likely to graduate. So join me in United Way. Suit up and take the pledge. Become a volunteer reader, tutor, or mentor. Because when a child succeeds, we all succeed. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way, the Ad Council, and the National Football League.
This is Guru Rocky Twitchell of Citrus Heights, California, and you are listening to the Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio Show.
Hi, I'm Restita De Jesus.
And I'm Robert Deal.
We're the founders of the Seika Network on blogtalkradio.com.
And we've got some great events that we'd like to share with you.
On July 6th through the 11th, 2014, the International Tai Chi Chuan Symposium will present an exciting event where five Tai Chi Grandmasters, each representing the traditional Chen, Yang, Wu Hao, Wu, and Sun styles of Tai Chi, will share their knowledge and skills. Tai Chi practitioners from all levels, including beginners, will benefit from this opportunity to learn and practice directly with the Grandmasters. The five masters that will be teaching at this event are Chen Zhenlei, Yang Jun, Zhang Zhenchan, Ma Hailong, and Sun Yongtian. You don't even have to be an experienced Tai Chi practitioner to attend. Whether you're a health promotion planner, healthcare provider, personal trainer, martial artist, physical education instructor, or school administrator, all are welcome to attend. Don't miss this opportunity to train directly under the masters. For more information to register for Directly from the Source, just go to www.taichisymposium.com or you can email info@taichisymposium.com.
You're listening to the Dynamic Dojo Show with Restita and Robert, your source for martial arts talk radio.
All right, and we are back. If you're just now tuning in, this is Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio with Restita and Robert. And today we're also joined on the line by Grandmaster Dan Harmon, who will be joining us for our open mic. And it's open mic, folks. It's open dojo floor. You can call in, say hello, send a shout out to someone, tell us a little bit about your dojo, tell us about a little bit about what you do, complain about something, rave about something. Let's talk about anything, well, other than religion and politics. So 347-677-0699, that's our number here. Give us a call, or you can do our chat board on our Blog Talk Radio show marquee. Now, if you're listening on Facebook, there is no chat board there. So if you start typing in questions or you want to say hi to someone or something and start typing on the comments under the marquee on Facebook, I'm not going to see it. So go to the actual show marquee and get on the chat board there. All right. Well, let's open the mics up for everyone. So, Bob, do you have any rants, raves, or anything you want to talk about, and then we'll get to Grandmaster Dan.
Yeah, a couple things. One, since we're going to get into some tournament stuff, I forgot about it, is there's going to be a Lima Llama tournament. Now, this is not just Lima Llama, but it's sponsored by the Lima Llama guys, Richard Nunez and Gabriel Zayas. That's going to be July 12, 2014, in 2 weeks. At 8435 South Greenleaf Avenue, Whittier, in Whittier, California. It is actually awesome. At a hotel, but the hotel is not listed. Now, I want to rant a little bit about dress at a tournament. I went to this tournament. I was invited by Mike Rivera 2 years ago to go to this tournament. I was in a cutoff shirt, jean shorts, tennis, and socks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's waving these flags at me, the judge, and I'm like, I felt horrible. If somebody isn't dressed appropriately to judge, I don't think they should be allowed to judge.
Mm-hmm.
I was forced to judge because they were really short-handed, but I surely wasn't dressed for it.
Mm-hmm.
That is my rant. I was dressed so inappropriate. I should have. And of course, I went last year, and I came in full gi with a belt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's rare that I, like, I went to a tournament yesterday, and if somebody was not in a martial art uniform, they were actually dressed very smartly, you know, like in, well, I would say business, not necessarily formal business attire, but like business casual, in a sense. You know, they were dressed very smartly, you know, no flip-flops, no, you know, tank tops or shorts or anything like that. They were dressed very smartly, had their little, you know, tags on and everything, and were very professional. But every now and again, you know, you see the people out there that are just in, like, you know, ratty T-shirts and shorts and flip-flops and a hat worn backwards. And it's like, really? You know, what's going on? But... yeah.
Right, and of course, I was at Tagovailoa's tournament last year, and all of his judges were mandatory suits. Flash,
oh.
Jacket, tie, white mm-hmm. button down, yeah.
That's very cool. Yeah,
that is very cool.
I did a seminar where we had to wear blazers. And we got these things that actually, like, attached to the collars, and, like, they attached to the collars, and it actually hung down the back, so it wasn't like a flag for, like, marathon runners or anything like that, but it was just this cool tag thing that went down the back of your blazer that said official on it, that kind of thing. And every official actually we were numbered, right? Like A something, 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 or D something, something, something. And you actually had to register as an official. They wouldn't just pull people that happen to wear a black belt. You had to register as an official, and you had to attend 3 of the training clinics prior to that particular tournament to make sure that you knew how to judge this tournament. It was wushu, so, you know, you actually had to follow all the rules. And if you didn't have this thing on your blazer, you didn't get to judge. And I thought it was just the coolest thing to make sure that everything was fair and impartial and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. Now, I'm going to rant about something about tournaments, too, but I'm not going to do that yet. I want to turn the mic over to Grandmaster Harmon. And I want to hear, you know, what's going on with Grandmaster Dan and any events you might have coming up, or tell us a little bit about your dojo. I'm going to give you the mic now, Grandmaster Dan.
Hello.
Hello.
I said hello. Hello.
Oh.
No, let me see events that I got coming up. Well, this year I was supposed to be going on tour. The plan was originally I was going to go to New Mexico, Arizona, California, and Nevada, but those all got kind of squashed temporarily because of finances. I ended up with car problems. That's what we're going to use for our transportation to go to all these locations, and had 3 computers crash. So we're getting ready to get those out. But next year we are planning on doing that. The hard part with next year of our plans for going on tour is there's one event that I've been asked to participate in, and I have no clue on where it's going to be held at, but I've had several people that are in the USA Martial Arts Hall of Fame ask me to fill out the paperwork, send it in, and get nominated as a member of the USA Martial Arts Hall of Fame. And recently...
Oh, right on.
Recently I've been asked that the next time I'm in California, as long as it's at the moment when they're holding the event, to get nominated into the Masters Hall of Fame. And the Guardian Angels, the regional coordinator, has asked me to, whenever I can, to do a tour and demonstrate some techniques on police tactics and anti-police tactics so that they know what to look for to their members. And David Lee, who is a legend, one of the many legends in martial arts,
mm-hmm.
has offered that if I come out to Reno, do a seminar for the Guardian Angels out there, that he would be willing to assist me.
Oh.
Which, you know, he's been in the martial arts about 10, 20 years longer than I have. And so, you know, it's a big honor to have someone like him wanting to assist me.
Mm-hmm.
When we go on that tour, one of the things that we're looking at doing is meeting up with Sky Benson, hopefully Alan Woodman, but I haven't been able to get a hold of him lately. He's been really busy. And
mm-hmm.
one gentleman said that he's going to try and arrange a dinner for me and my fiance to have a dinner with him and Cynthia Ruff.
Oh, right on.
So, I mean, don't know if it's all going to happen in the way that we want, but, you know, things are up in the air. It's all about finances right now.
Oh, I hear you about finances. I have to travel a lot this year, and I'm like, I better sell a lot of private lessons.
Yeah,
well, that's right
like,
on.
A lot of students popping up out of woodwork now wanting to train. So you look on Facebook, you notice that there's some videos being posted up now by other people under my system. Like there's this guy, Will. He's doing some videos now dealing with ninjutsu philosophy. And the opening of every one of his videos has my school logo on it, and then down below it has his city and state. So he's basically running a philosophical class out there online.
Mm-hmm.
And then here soon, I've got a guy in Oregon that's posting up videos and opening up, getting the dojo out there up and running. So, now you were talking about restaurants earlier, about
mm-hmm.
an incident involving restaurants, and I could not get this one situation out of my mind. Because of what I had went through with my cousins, I went to Reno, Nevada to
mm-hmm.
meet with my cousins one time. This was back about 11 years ago. And I really think, because of situations like this, I really think that there should be bouncers in all-you-can-eat restaurants.
Bouncers as far as, like, people, you know, for people that eat too much or the people that get stupid?
The people that eat too much. There was five of my cousins and me and one and my uncle. Now, I'm sitting there with one plate filled with food and, you know, one full plate, a couple glasses of soda, you know, not all at the same time, but and then one little plate with a snack on it. My cousins mm-hmm. turn to me and say, "Is that all you can eat?" My cousins, just one of them alone, now imagine six of them doing this,
mm-hmm.
had seven plates with a mountain of food on every one of them. And then three big plates filled with a mountain of junk food on it. The waitress got so tired of filling up their glasses that she just brought over a picture of their drink, one for each one of them. And instead of drinking, of pouring it in the glass, my cousins and uncle drank straight out of the picture.
What?
They had eaten. The six of them together had consumed $300 worth of food. And the manager came over and said, "Sorry, you've eaten way over the limit. You need to leave." And my uncle, who, by the way, is a biker, got up in the manager's face and said, "How dare you tell me I've eaten too much? This isn't an all-you-can-eat restaurant."
Mm-hmm.
So he had to call the casino security to have him escorted out. I mean, the rest of us were leaving, no problems, okay. And we have, and my cousins, you know, they're all like, "Can we have a doggy bag?" What? You don't get doggy bags.
Yeah.
You just out of business, okay? Just go. And security had to remove my uncle.
Oh,
so,
my
God.
I never could understand why some all-you-can-eat restaurants, not all, but why some actually will put a limit on people. Now, you know, I usually go to this one Chinese buffet because they have really good food. I mean, I go once a week because every weekend they've got, like, all-you-can-eat crab claws and crawdads.
Wow.
I call them mud bugs, but crawdads and clams and mussels and other cool Chinese food. And, you know, and families come in there and they eat family style because, you know, they're Chinese. So they'll grab plates and fill these plates full of whatever and then just put it on the table so everyone can eat because they would have been taking the same amount of food anyway, right? And there are signs everywhere that say, don't waste food. And I understand that. But if you're going to go to an all-you-can-eat restaurant, why would you have a limit on what people can eat, I guess? You know what I mean? But, you know, there had to have been some way for the management to have been a little more dignified about how he approached your uncle, you know? But on the other hand, you know, I guess it would have been another thing that your uncle got up and got in his face. Oh, my God. But, yeah, that I don't understand why all-you-can-eat restaurants would put a limit. It's an all-you-can-eat.
The thing is, Rusty, your eyes are bigger than your stomach, and you start just piling stuff on, and then you leave half the food on the table when you leave. I think that's the big problem that they have.
But I would imagine that your family, Dan, would have finished everything, you know.
You could have brought a forklift over and just dumped it in their mouth. It would have been no different. I mean, looking at him, like one of my cousins, she's really petite. She stands at 5'8" and really, really skinny. And I'm looking at her, she's got like 9 plates in front of her with mountains of food, 2 pitchers of soda. And I'm looking at her, where the heck are you putting all this?
Yeah, you shaking it down and putting in that hollow leg.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's going to have to be 2 hollow legs and a couple of hollow arms. I thought it was, while I'm sitting there, I'm looking at him, thinking to myself, what is this? Is this an eating contest? Who can stuff down the most junk?
You're right. Oh, my gosh. Now, speaking of, like, eating a lot. This is kind of like a related rant. Now at my studio, we do a lot of, well, we used to do, we're starting it again, but we used to do a lot of potluck gatherings. So, you know, like after a test, you know, let's do a potluck afterwards. Or we'd have a potluck Christmas/holiday party or potluck picnics, you know, out at a local park, you know, in the summer and stuff like that. And what I want to rant about is when people bring absolutely nothing to the potluck.
So many times.
Yeah, where they bring absolutely nothing and they pile their plates like they hadn't eaten in 2 days.
Exactly.
And, yeah, it drives me insane. One holiday party that we had, there was this family that came that brought absolutely nothing. Nothing. And they knew for 2 months that this was a holiday party. You know, we put up the food sign-up thing, who's bringing plates, who's bringing cups, who's bringing all the drinks, who's bringing side dishes, main dishes, desserts, whatever, right? 2 months. And even though everyone brought food, I kid you not, we ran out of the main dishes. So we had to send someone to go to the local Chinese restaurant and get more food because this family literally... They sat at one table, and the whole thing was, like, was filled with food. And I'm like, where are they putting this? What's going on? Are they, you know, they have boxes in their backpacks? Where are they putting all this food? I know they're not going to eat all that. What's that?
You also got to think about those that are strategic about bringing food.
Oh, uh-huh.
When I lived in Boise, I used to hold potluck dinner parties and lunch parties all the time, you know, for my community and for my friends and family and whatnot. And there was this one person that eventually we stopped sending invitations to because he would strategically bring something every time that he knew that no one else was going to eat. And the purpose behind it was so that he could come down, eat your food, and he can sit around and say, well, I brought a dish. I just don't understand why anyone's eating it. And he knows that no one's going to eat it because it's something that no one likes. So he can eat all this food and still bring his entire dish back home with him.
Oh, you know, see.
No one's looking, or when they think no one's looking, they have, like, they have interlined their backpack or purse, whatever, with a plastic bag so that when they think no one's looking, they're taking food off the plate and putting it in their purse for them to take home with, like it's some kind of doggy bag.
Right. Oh, my God.
Wow.
I've caught some people doing that. I caught my own aunt at one of my dinner parties. I'm walking
oh,
into the
my
kitchen.
Gosh.
She brought it back to me. She doesn't realize that I walked in. Because, you know, ninjutsu skills, walk like a cat, really quiet, and it's just natural to me now.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know I was behind her. She was watching her. So I walked back out. I'm like, I went to my wife. I was like, do you realize your aunt is stuffing her purse with food?
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, she's not. I was like, yeah. When you get a chance, take a peek in her purse. She looked in her purse and, you know, and she thought that her aunt wasn't looking and came back over to me and she's like, are you sure that's food or is that poop? It looks like a mess in there. I was like, no, that's food. She's been sticking food in there. That gets the garbage disposal so she can eat it later.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah. And speaking of strategic, I hate it when people come to potlucks and they bring chips.
Oh, just, yeah, because you know no one's going to really, I mean, if you see one person coming in with chips, you know there's going to be a lot more, and you're going to look at it like, well,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
going to be a nice meal.
It makes no sense.
as a benefactor of the person holding the potluck, it's always a good thing for that person that's holding the potluck.
Mm-hmm.
Back when times are really hard on me, because my income always fluctuates all throughout my life, and I think everyone goes through that.
Mm-hmm.
There were times where I would hold potlucks. Now, this is another strategic potluck dinner. Because
mm-hmm.
you know, people, if there's still food on the plate and not everything's been eaten, you know that
mm-hmm.
some people are going to leave their food behind. So it's a great thing to hold a potluck when you come to the realization, crap, I don't have enough food for the rest of the month. I'm going to be at the end of the month, I don't have enough food. Potluck! Because people will leave their dishes there, and so I say, well, just return it to me when you're done with it. You say, you know, it'd be nice. You watch it, you return it to them, you know. But you just took care of your food problem for that last week of the month because your check was small.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another strategic potluck reason right there.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, potlucks. I love going to potlucks. It's just that, you know, when people bring chips, I think they're warranted to get the evil eye from everybody else that had actually slaved over a stove to bring something cool to the potluck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my
God. And,
you
know, some people really go out of their way on making their dishes. I mean, I went to a potluck a few months back, and I knew that I had to make something good because everyone at this potluck, they were all excellent cooks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just great cooks. So I made the best dish that I could think of making, and one that I thought that no one else would bring. So I made
mm-hmm.
orange chicken almond. And before I knew it, everyone was asking me for the recipe.
Ooh,
I was
like,
oh, good. Very good. Not to exchange recipes.
Yeah, I usually make like something cool like Filipino food or something like that. Like one time I actually took the time to make lumpia, right? And for the listeners out there that have no idea what lumpia is as far as Filipino food is concerned, it's kind of like fried egg rolls. So it's kind of like that. And normally we dip them in a sauce of soy sauce, vinegar and garlic, you mash it all together and you've got like this cool, like, you know, you can even put hot peppers in there and it's just a cool thing to dip them in and they're really good, but it's really time consuming like any other egg rolls are. Now my mouth is watering. What's that?
Dinner?
Yeah.
When is dinner?
When is dinner? Exactly. It is so time consuming. So like just to make, I made like 200 of these lumpia, right? And it took 2 days to make all the meat and vegetable mixtures and to wrap them all and stuff. So it took 2 days, and 2 minutes for them to all come off of the containers at the potluck. And I'm like, okay, so that's cool. I guess it's a cool thing, right? And it's worth it to see people really enjoying them and stuff. But what really gets my goat is when somebody goes through all this trouble, and then they put it on their plate, and they actually out loud, you know, and actually show their action. They put it in their mouth and then spit it out like a puh. What the hell was
that?
You know what I mean? And I'm you know, somebody actually did that. And an adult did that with my lumpia. And I'm like, is there something wrong? Oh, I hate lima beans. You know, why did you put lima beans in here? And I went, excuse me? Last I checked, you were a student. Who are you talking to? You know what I mean? Are you talking to the person behind me that helped me make this lumpia? You know? And I'm like, oh, my God, you know, spit it out discreetly. If you don't like it, I'm sorry. But, God, don't be rude.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Dispose of it. Well,
I was like, oh, my God, are you freaking serious? Really? Really?
You got to be polite. No, if you can't be polite, don't come back.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
You have to help this
out. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I held a potluck. I held a potluck one time that the neighborhood thought was the most scariest potluck they've ever heard of. One of my neighbors came over and saw all these people in my house and everything. It's like, what are you doing? Oh, we're having a potluck. If you want, you can go and make something and come on over. Okay, whatever. Who are these people? Oh, they're all attorneys. What?
Oh.
Yeah, they're all lawyers. But I had 30 lawyers and so many secretaries and so many paralegals all in my house. We're all having a potluck. And my neighbor's like, I'll come to the next potluck.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's about the scariest kind of potluck you can have is, you know, having it filled with attorneys or dentists.
I know, right?
Or
that's
the
pretty
worst,
cool.
I think the worst kind of potluck you could have is have a potluck where everyone in the room are dietitians, licensed dietitians. How many calories you're putting in your mouth? I don't care. It tastes good.
It's
oh,
bacon.
That would be horrible.
It's bacon. I'll do it anyway. Oh, my
gosh.
I'll
do some exercise tomorrow.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. So, listeners, we're having a great time here at the Dynamic Dojo. Give us a call. Join the fun. Tell us about rant about anything. It's open mic. Rave about anything. Like, if you got, like, really great customer service at a restaurant or somewhere, you know, call us and let us know because, you know, we'll recognize that restaurant. We'll even – or that place that you went to, and we'll promote it. And, you know, so our phone number here is 347-677-0699. All right. Well, I have a rant. Speaking of tournaments, well, you know what? Before we get to the rant, I do want to make a shout-out to an upcoming tournament. The tournament I went to yesterday was an NBL – / SKITA SKITA tournament, national organization. I used to compete in NBL, and I used to be a judge for NBL, and I recently just got back into judging NBL SKITA and SKI tournaments and stuff. And the next local tournament, at least here in the Seattle, Washington area, is the City of Destiny Classic, and it's going to be held in Tacoma, Washington. And the City of Destiny is actually the nickname for Tacoma. And it's going to be September 13th, 2014, being held at Pacific Lutheran University in Tacoma, Washington, which is just south of Seattle, about 30 minutes south of Seattle. And there's going to be all sorts of great divisions. There's going to be your usual sparring and forms, but there's also going to be breaking competitions as well. weapons, the whole nine yards. It's open to all styles, all levels. And this is another one of those tournaments where you have to register as a judge. Don't just plan on showing up and assume that someone's going to pick you. You have to register as a judge for all of these NBL tournaments. And for this particular tournament, it is being hosted by Master Mike Shintaku, Master David Carmen, and Master Dennis Elliott. And great tournament. I've been to a lot of Mike Shintaku's tournaments and competed in many of his NBL tournaments in the past, and they're always wonderful tournaments. So if you're from the Pacific Northwest, if you're from Seattle, British Columbia, Idaho, Oregon, anywhere in this particular area, come to the City of Destiny Classic. It's pretty cool. All right, so now on to my rant about tournaments. Okay, what I hate is when people, I don't care who they are, I don't care if they're other black belts, I don't care if they're people from the stands, I don't care, is when people will take the time out of their day to argue with you and question a judge's call. Okay, so that's my rant, and I'm going to tell you the story behind it.
Yeah.
I was the center judge for a particular ring yesterday. I was chosen to be the center judge, and in a lot of these NBL tournaments, if you are chosen to be the center official, you are in that ring. That is your ring all day. All day. And I'm like, okay, I'll be the center for ring five, sure. So, you know, sat there all day watching forms and, you know, spent hours and hours, you know, judging continuous sparring and point sparring. Well, during one of the point sparring matches, two teenagers were going at it. These were intermediate level, so they were both purple/blue belts. And one of the kids, one of the boys, had inadvertently smashed one of the other boys square in the front of the face with a full power round kick. Okay. And I was standing right there, and I heard the smack and the sound of the nose busting and blood sprays everywhere, all over.
Oh.
Right. And so there's like, you know, and I went, stop, you know, and well, let me back up. I was going to call stop because the kid that kicked the other kid in the nose, he scored with a nice spinning hook kick. And that's a 2-point kick. Or no, sorry, that was a spinning kick. So that was a spinning kick to the head. That's 3 points. And I went in there, and I put my hands up, and I went to go step in to go say stop. And I saw the kid's kick come up, and it barely grazed my hand and smashed the other kid right in the nose and completely, like, shattered it, right? And blood everywhere, blood over his gi, all over my shoes, all over the other kid, all over the floor, right? So I'm, stop, stop, yummy, yummy, yummy. And, you know, I broke them apart. The other kid went to go sit down. We called over a paramedic, and the other kid's on his knees sitting down. And it took about literally 10 minutes to figure out what was going on with this kid. You know, was it just his nose started bleeding, or was it broken? And the paramedic looked up at me and said, it's broken. Just to make sure that, you know, his nasal passages are okay, you know, he's going to have to go to the hospital. But that kid, he wanted to continue. And I'm like, dude, you can't. Your nose is still bleeding, right? And he's like, well, you know, can I at least bow out? And I'm like, well, okay, you know, what a warrior, right? Well, anyway, I picked up the other kid, and I said, hey, you know what? His nose is broken. And according to the rules, that counts as a disqualification. On top of the fact that I gave you two warnings prior for contact to the head. This is the third time you broke his nose. That's too much contact. And NBL rules state you're disqualified. And he was fine with it. He's like, yes, ma'am, I'm so sorry. I understand. That's fine. That's fine. And he was great about it. And I bowed them out. And they shook hands. And the kid was so apologetic, gave him a hug and walked with him. And I'm like, well, wait, you know, come back over here. You know, we need to talk to you more about this and that and the other thing. Well, anyway, one of these kids is, I don't know, teammates or whatever. I guess it was a black belt, but a young black belt. This kid couldn't have been more than 23 or 25 years old. you know, pretty young, right? Wasn't even in uniform, okay? And he's like, so, excuse me, you know, why is he being disqualified? And I'm like, he broke a kid's nose. And the guy goes, well, he really didn't kick him that hard. It really wasn't that hard. And the other kid had his hands down. And I went, whoa, 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 whoa. What are we talking about? And he's like, that spinning hook kick, you know, you should have called it. And I went, back the hell up. Back the hell up. You know, I'm
judge.
Like, you're arguing a point. What's that?
You're a judge. You have a responsibility as a judge or referee to make sure that the rules are being kept to. And this
exactly.
was not clearly not full contact competition. So,
mm-hmm.
therefore, the rules are not the same. I mean, when I was competing full competition, I break my nose, I go over to the corner, get some, like, tissue stuffed up there, go back out there. But this is not one of those kind of competitions, it sounds like.
Exactly. It wasn't. It was point. Yeah, it was just point sparring. And, you know, which is funny because it's, you know, no contact to the face, kiss contact to the headgear, you know, and NBL rules state, it's ultimately up to the player to be responsible for their own techniques. You know, it
yeah.
wasn't like the other kid walked into it. You know, I mean, who's gonna say, you know what, in this tournament, even though I'm losing, I'm going to just walk right into that kick and break my own face. I don't think anyone plans on doing that, right? And it really wasn't all that bad. It was a pretty close match. It was like 14 to, you know, 11 or something like that. And it was going great until the poor kid got clocked. But anyway, this other guy, I don't know if he was I'm assuming he was a teammate or whatever, right? He started questioning me. He's like, and I said, no, I was going to call that spinning hook kick. And just as I was going to, he round kicked, just as I said, yummy, he round kicked, hit the other kid. And the kid went to go, you know, grab his face, and the other kid kept coming. And I had to literally step in between them and start screaming, mate, mate, stop it, stop it. And, okay, now there's blood all over my shoe. There's blood all over the floor. And the kid knew what he did. He kicked him, and now his nose is broke, right? But here's this other
yeah.
guy going, well, he really didn't kick him that hard. And I'm like, I was standing right here. And he said, well, so was I. And I went, how long have you been judging? Because I've been judging longer than you've been alive. And I bet I taught people as young as your parents were when they were kids. So don't ever come into this ring and start questioning a center judge. You want to argue? You go to an arbitrator. And I called over the arbitrator. I said, give me that microphone. You need an arbitrator in ring five. Arbitrator in ring five, please. And I'm like, you talk to him because this is my call. He's disqualified. That's it. End of discussion. And afterwards, I saw the same guy talking to another guy just outside of the ring, and I heard the word bitch pop up a couple times. And I'm like, you know, whatever, whatever, whatever. And,
hey.
And ugh, whatever.
You know, that's,
you know what?
That kid should be careful because in most states there's still a blue book law that states you are not allowed to use profanity in the presence of women and children. Some states give you a fine for using profanity. Other states will arrest you for it.
Wow. I didn't know that there was that there were, like, other blue book laws like that. I didn't know that. But,
and
yeah.
Honestly, Rusty, nobody can call you a bitch but me.
That's right. Bob said, no one can call you a bitch but me.
Well, what I love is I was put up for adoption, and when I was 19, I was reunited with my birth mother. Well, many years after I got reunited with my birth mother, the relationship has never been very good. After I got to know about her and everything, and know her personality. Well, she decided to argue with me about something. Now, I have an IQ of 152. My mom, not so smart.
Mm-hmm.
And a sign of that, she got angry and came on and said, you know what, you're a son of a bitch. So I called her and you went, really? I turned on and asked her, Mom, do you realize what you just called yourself? She's like, and then she hung up on me.
Yeah. I love it when people I love it when people do stuff like that without even thinking. And I don't think that I really don't think that this one, I'm going to call him a kid, because if he's like, I don't care if he's over 21, if he's going to act like that in a martial art tournament and talk to a center official that way, it just speaks volumes about how they were raised in the martial arts or how he himself, you know, views the rules at a tournament. Yeah. I mean, and as a martial artist, I mean, I see, you know, calling out a bad call, but that's what arbitrators are for. But, you know, blood on the floor, you know, and then telling me it wasn't that hard, and the other kid put his hands down. So what that guy was doing was basically blaming the other kid for breaking his own nose. What? You know, it doesn't matter that he had his hands down. In fact, they weren't down. He was trying to punch with his right hand and turned his hip into it. So he's facing to the left. Here comes a right round kick. Boom. You know what I mean? So it was like, oh, my gosh, you know. It was just the ugliest thing I'd seen.
He's a black belt. And in many systems, a black belt is a level of being an instructor. Black belt is instructor for many systems. So he had a responsibility to be professional, and he was not professional that day. He was not. He had a responsibility as an instructor or soon to be instructor to sit it out, be quiet,
exactly.
Talk to people about it afterwards.
Yeah,
you know, not to make a scene because
don't
he
make
is
a
representative
scene. Yeah.
Of everyone below him on how a person should behave.
I know, right? And if it's like, even if it was. If they're from the same camp, you know, the kid that broke the other kid's nose, I mean, his dojang name was plastered all over the back of his dobok. So it's kind of like, now I know where you're from. Why are you being an idiot and making your master look like an idiot? You know, what are you doing? You know, why are you arguing with me? You know, it's kind of like, this is not about a point. He just wouldn't get it. This is not about me not calling a point. This is about him kicking with enough force to break a nose, and this is the rules. This is a no-contact, you know, sparring match, and I have to go by the rules. I have to. I have to look out for the safety, blah, blah, blah. And he just wouldn't let it go. And it gets worse. It turns out that one of my corner judges had to leave because he was going to compete. So I'm like, okay, go. And we asked for another black belt judge. Turns out the only person that was available was that same kid that was arguing with me. So
oh,
was
my God, really?
Yeah. And what's that?
On the lines of competitions, I think another thing that should be discussed is, you know, most martial arts competitions, they all ran very fairly. But I ran across, you know, I started out competing in forms competitions with weapons and then went on to full contact competition.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that, you know, that people who are looking to get into competition, they will get people that will approach them sometimes and say, hey, I would like you to compete in my tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Check that out. Check them out very thoroughly because I've been to a few matches where the people running the match were crooked, as crooked as they come. I was wondering this one time. Now, they're supposed to weigh you. When you go into a full contact competition, you're both supposed to be in the room together. You and your opponent are supposed to be in together in the room together so that when you're being weighed, you can see that you are both in the same weight classification. I went to this competition one where my opponent wasn't even in the room. So I'm like, well, where's my opponent at? We're supposed to be waiting together. Oh, well, he's using the restroom. He'll be in here soon. So I was like, okay. I went in the ring, saw this guy, and the guy was huge. Back then the weight classes were different. See, now I'd be considered a light heavyweight, which they didn't even have that classification back then. You either have middleweight or heavyweight. I was considered a middleweight back then. This guy was classified as a heavyweight. And I'm stepping in the ring with, I'm thinking to myself, dear God, I'm stepping in the ring with Andre the Giant. Now, I came real close to winning the match. And, you know, I'm observing this and everything else. And I'm, you know, keeping, because I saw that this was a crooked match. So I decided, to keep a mental note on how many blows he was taking on me and how many blows I was taking. And I asked, before the bell rang, I told my corner to keep in track on how many mm-hmm. blows each of us are throwing on each other mm-hmm. and how many pins there are and so on and so forth. So I was mm-hmm. coming really close to winning mm-hmm. the match. And mm-hmm. it came out, this I can't remember the number, so I'm just throwing something out there. The judges came on and said that it came out 30, me, and 90. And I'm like, oh, no.
What?
I have thrown like about maybe 10 to 15 less punches than he did. Not that big mm-hmm. of a number.
Yeah.
Well, you know, then... You know, a couple of days later, this other fight promoter came up to me and said, I would like to have you in one of my fights. I saw you fight, and I know you're really good. To let you know, that fight was crooked. I was like,
you think?
Damn, Tuesday, what? Yeah.
You well, think?
I was stupid. Another thing, that, another reason why you want to check out the promoters also, especially if you're going to do full contact, mm-hmm. is one of the arenas that I went to go and compete at. I found out later on that, see, my match was in the middle of the whole show. I was maybe the third person up. There were five or six fights that night,
mm-hmm.
one ring. So after my match, you know, I won my match. And, you know, he had put me up against someone that he was sure that I wasn't going to win. You know, this mm-hmm. other promoter, some totally other guy's his name was Lee Rice.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, after I left, I started hearing rumors, but only bits and pieces, that there was, I heard one rumor that there was a raid, police came by, that there was selling drugs, I mean, all sorts of just completely off-the-wall stuff. And I refused to believe rumors. I like to mm-hmm. hear facts. I like to look
right.
at facts. Well, the following day, I had gotten a newspaper, and I'm reading through it, and in there was an article, Lee Rice arrested for selling illegal narcotics during a martial arts competition. And I'm like,
whoa.
Oh,
during a tournament?
Yeah, during a tournament.
Oh, man.
He was not only the person that promoted the fight, but he was one of the judges. All three judges, the ref, and one of the paramedics, out of the three paramedics that were there, were arrested
mm-hmm.
for selling drugs to people in the audience.
Whoa.
And because the Jazz and Slice School lost their business, because in the state of Idaho, and there's a lot of states starting to do this, if you are busted for selling drugs out of your home, and some places if you're busted for selling drugs out of your business establishment, the government can seize that property. This lady signed a contract with this guy, giving him permission to hold his competition in her gym, and it was a jazzercise gym,
mm-hmm.
lost her business.
And
he ended up having to go to jail. She was released afterwards, because they found that she didn't know that this was going to be going on.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
She spent her life looking at the butt. Yeah. So, you know, it's important to, you know, like with your situation, if someone in the audience should not be, you know, talking trash to the judges and everything like that. You got a problem, talk to them afterwards. You know,
yeah.
In private. And
exactly.
If you're going to be competing, especially if it's a full competition, full contact competition,
mm-hmm.
check out the people that you're going to be working with, because that's what you're doing. You're working with them. You
yeah.
are signing a contract to get your butt handed to you in a ring.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Exactly.
So, I mean, in full competition, full contact competitions, there are a lot of crooked practices. I mean, Tito Ortiz, apparently, he was only getting 10% of the profits off of the likeness of his image for everything that UFC was selling.
Only 10%?
Yeah.
And where does the rest of it go? To the promoters, yeah?
To the promoters, it's mainly to Don White.
Oh. Wow.
Was the one behind this. I mean,
wow.
I don't like to talk that to people, but, you know, it's publicly known.
Yeah.
I mean,
it sucks. That sucks. You know, if someone's going to make money off of your image or off of your, well, you know, your career. I mean, Tito Ortiz, you know, you see his photos everywhere, and you know about his career. You know, if anyone's following, you know, MMA, you know about his career. And, you know, he worked his butt off for that, and then you take a picture, you know, of him and then use it for your own marketing, right? Not his marketing, not Tito's marketing, but your own marketing, in this case, UFC or whatever, right? And you're making money off of it and only offer 10% of, you know, of a royalty kickback. I mean, come on, you can do better than that.
Yeah.
Well, they can
do
better than that.
One of the things that's really bad, and it's very common, I mean, even for him, one of the things that's very common is that fighters, they just want to get in the ring and they want to win that title or win that trophy. They want to elevate themselves in status through their fights and everything.
Right.
But the longer that they do this, like Tito Ortiz, he may have grown up in Long Beach and was a troublemaker back then, but he was actually very, very smart. And the thing with fighters, the common thing with fighters, is they, as time progresses, what they want changes because they start seeing how the business of promoting fights works and everything like that. So they want to be a part of that. And, you know, that's great. And it's important, too, because some promoters, when you start, the bigger you get, some promoters will take advantage of the fighter because they view fighters as kind of like Rocky Balboa. All he knows how to do is throw a punch. He can't even spell.
Mm-hmm.
So they try to take advantage of the fighters. So it's, you know, it's very important if anyone that wants, and I'm going to say this out to everyone if that's okay. If you want to go into professional fighting, check out your promoter. See what they're about. Check out the industry. And the bigger you get into fighting, get a manager that knows what he's doing. He or she
knows.
Or someone that has, not someone that read a book and says, oh, I know how to do it. No, someone that has experience.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Do that, folks, and don't just get into any competition and, you know, just because, and, you know, don't have, like, these pipe dreams of I'm going to be the next UFC star and stuff like that, because if you are getting involved with somebody crooked that might not even have anything to do with the UFC, then you're screwed, you know, especially if you sign a contract with that particular promoter. So, you know, do your homework, folks, out there, because I remember when WWF wrestling was pretty big. I think it still is. I think they call it WWE now. I don't remember. I haven't followed wrestling in a long time. I used to love to watch it.
Yeah, they had to switch it to WWE because there's an organization that they called the World Wildlife something or other,
something.
The E. So
I remember something about a picture of a panda, and they sued the WWF or something like that. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Really? Come on. But, yeah, I remember when WWF was really popular, like in the 90s. I mean, like huge. That was when I was still watching it, right? And I knew so many teenagers that wanted to be the next Macho Man or the next, you know, Andre the Giant or the next, you know, just the or the next Randy Orton or whatever, right? You know, everyone wanted to be a UFC star.
I grew up in Los Angeles, so every weekend that I could get, that I had the money to go down to Venice Beach, this was back in the 80s, I would go down to Venice Beach and have Hulk Hogan sign autographs for me and then take it back to school and make money off of it.
That's awesome.
And he would work out at what they called back then Muscle Beach, you know, where all the lifting equipment was. So, I mean, a lot of his kids would go out there and just sit there and drool over Hulk Hogan. Like, God, I'd like to be big like him one day. You know, and he'd come up with us, take pictures with us and everything like that, and then not go back to school himself. So I wanted to be like Hulk Hogan. And so did everyone in my school want to be like Hulk Hogan. So I
That's
became the
awesome.
Top of the school because I was regularly hanging out with Hulk Hogan, as they put it. I wasn't actually hanging out with him, though. The closest I got to hanging out with him is when he would come over and take a picture with me and sign an autograph. Other than that, I'm sitting behind the railing watching him
uh-huh.
play.
How cool is that, though? How cool is that? And,
very
you know,
cool.
Yeah, and all these kids that I knew that wanted to be WWE stars, you know, the ones that assumed that they knew how to wrestle because they just knew from watching, right? They were convinced that they were going to be the next, you know, WWE star. There was like this one kid that used to live across the alley from me, and he used to just randomly come by and knock on the door, and he used to just talk while I was doing dishes or whatever. And I'm like, so what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I was in my backyard. I was practicing my signature move. I'm like, oh, you have a signature move now. Have you tried actually practicing with other people? You know what I mean? maybe practicing to get some actual experience against someone that actually might decide that they want to act and fight back, you know? And, you know, and it's just so it was kind of cool to see, you know, because any kid that wants something so bad that they can taste it, it makes you want to, like, help them out and stuff like that. So I'm like, okay, this is how you do a very basic hip check. This is how you do a very basic hip throw, blah, 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 underhook this, overhook that, blah, blah. You know, so I helped them a little bit in the backyard and stuff. But, you know, it was hard to watch because his family wasn't very supportive, you know, and you know and his siblings were, how do I put this? They just weren't supportive, you know. All they would want to do is like sit around, drink beer, and get high. Let's just put it that way. And it was kind of like, you know, what do we do, you know? And I was afraid he was going to go out and, you know, find a crooked promoter without knowing, because he's got no real world experience. He was like 15, you know, and it was like, oh my gosh. And I wish that, you know, people actually had that advice back then, you know, watch the promoters, don't get stuck with some crooked jerk, you know, they'll ruin your life.
Yeah, well, I'm going to say to the parents, you know, one of the things I wanted to say about that you had mentioned is, you know, mm-hmm. parents not being supportive. I have 8 kids, okay? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All right?
Mm-hmm.
2 girls, 6 boys. And it's very important that if you're a parent, be supportive of your kids. No matter
mm-hmm.
what it is they want, as long as it's not something that's going to be harmful to themselves,
right.
be supportive. If it is something that is a little bit harmful, just a tiny bit, but not severely, then be supportive by finding someone that can show them how to do it safely.
Right.
Okay? Because as time progresses, kids change their minds about things. I mean, when I was
mm-hmm.
a kid, I had an uncle. He was like a friend of family. We just called him Uncle Kenny. And he was a police officer. Well, over time, I started seeing how crooked LAPD was, so I didn't want to be a cop anymore. I wanted to be a fireman. So
mm-hmm.
you know, my dad would take me over to play on fire trucks and stuff like that. And then I realized, you know what? I have a deep fear of fire. I mean, because when I was teen, I was caught in a forest fire. So after that, I became terrified of fire. I mean, I'll
mm-hmm.
still do what I need to do around fire. But as soon as I'm done, like, saving someone that's in a burning building or something like that, I want to get the heck away from that fire.
Right?
And then I became a huge, huge fan of John Lennon. So I became a musician. I played in a few bands. Then I started learning. This is when I was in my late teens, like from 17 to 19. I started learning how difficult it is to be in a band, because you got all these people that have a different opinion on how the music should sound. And sometimes
mm-hmm.
you got band members that won't show up for practice or won't show up for a gig. So, you know, I changed my mind about that. And that's, you know, at the time, you know, you just, the more, you change your mind throughout your adolescence. And then when you become an adult, sometimes you get to a situation where you're studying in a job field and you're like, well, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And then you start training in it halfway through your training, like, this sucks. Well, I guess that's what I'll be doing for the rest of my life because I spent all this money on getting an education on it.
Right.
Dear God, really reamed myself. So, you know, opinion is ideas of what people want to be changed. But it's important to support them. And for parents to remember, what they want to be today is not what they want to be tomorrow.
Exactly.
And they will grow up knowing that you were by their side, and they will love you for it. I mean,
exactly.
Instead of having a teenager that's going to be angry at you, oh, he never supported me, he never liked anything I did. They will look. They may have a little bitchy attitude, but they will still come back and think, you know, I wanted to be butterfly when I was a little girl. And my parents supported me in that. They made me butterfly wings, and they put it on my back. They were really supportive. And then I changed my mind. I wanted to be a princess. My parents supported me. They made me a crown, and we had a little royal moment. You know, they will look back and say, you know, some moments my parents may have been an ass to me, but at least they were always supportive of me.
Yeah, and that's very important, you know. You know, for parents to be supportive like that. Because otherwise, you know, it becomes hard for kids to dream when their parents aren't supportive. So it's. So, Bob, sorry, we took all the airtime, but I'm going to turn the mic over to you. Sorry, bro. You just went on and on.
I know. I couldn't get a word in. I just put my mic on mute. I ate my dinner while you guys were talking. I muted my mic and ate my dinner completely all the way through. And then look at that. We didn't share any dinner.
That's awesome.
So I get a call from our good friend Sophie Greg Wooldridge the other day, and this is going to be a topic we usually don't bring up. He's like, what is going on with you guys down in L.A.? And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, all this politics crap has to stop. And I said, Rusty and I, they keep trying to drag us into it, and we refuse to. So they trash talk us a little bit, and we tell them to go pound sand, and we're fine.
Yeah.
It's like, leave us out of this. We want nothing to do with your political views. And this is one of the reasons why Jenny says she doesn't go to the martial arts things with me, because the ego's in the politics.
I don't know why.
The reasons, like the biggest reason is probably because I'm there.
Oh. I don't understand the thing about politics either. Now, okay, listeners, when we talk about politics, we're talking about not the, you know, we're not talking about, you know,
Obama.
Like politics. We're not talking about Obama. We're not talking about, you know, elephants and donkeys or whatever, right? We're not talking about anything like that. We're talking about like the trivial crap about who deserves to inherit a system more than whoever else. We're talking about this person sucks. Why do they even call themselves a grandmaster when they're not? This and that and the other. And, you know, it's kind of, it's stupid. And it's just stupid. What's that?
I get people, there's about 15 people out there out of the hundreds of people that actually like me. There are about 15 people out there that say the same thing about me, saying, oh, he's not a real grandmaster, he's a fake, he's a fraud.
You know, I've seen that on your Facebook page, and it just pisses me off just to see the immaturity of these people, not only on your Facebook page that are trying to call you out. Okay, so they're trying to call you out, and then you accept the challenge, and then they don't show up. What does that make them look like? I mean, come on. You know, it's kind of like, I'm sorry, you call somebody out. What's that?
And the challenge is so stupid, because what they would do is they turn around and say, all right, if he kicks your butt, then you have to stop teaching and stop claiming that you're a grandmaster, and you have to tell the truth about your lineage.
Right. Yeah.
But,
it's stupid.
Okay, and if I kick him, then what do I get? Nothing.
Exactly. Yeah.
So how about this? I'm getting sick of this. So how about I show up, take your butt, and then afterwards I can go around with bragging rights saying, see, you're all talk, you can't even fight. And these are the people
that do that,
they are keyboard warriors. They have nothing better to do. And you look at their martial arts record, they have no real martial arts skills.
Yeah.
Most of them have no martial arts skills. I mean, like Don Rollin, he kept on saying, oh, I'm going to kick your butt and blah, 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 blah. So I showed up, as you saw. I showed up. He did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well,
exactly.
One of the world's most respected Bujikan martial artists, but he couldn't even show up.
You know, I think people just for any kind of politics, you know, not necessarily just, you know, who's a real ninjutsu grandmaster, but for any kind of politics, it's always about someone just wanting to flap their wings, or in this case, flap their gums. And, you know, a lot of my teachers in Kajikembo and One Hop Gendo, they always used to say, you know, they used to actually quote this out of the book, Living the Martial Way, Zen in the Martial Arts by Joe Hyams. They used to quote one of the stories in there about, you know, lengthening your own line, right? You guys know that story. You know, so it's kind of like, you know, why do these people choose to cut other people's strings rather than making their own strings longer? You know, I mean, it's like, you know, and that's just what I want to say to anyone is, like, rather than trying to cut someone else's string, regardless of whether or not they're real masters or not, it doesn't really matter. Why waste the energy on trying to cut someone else's strings and spending all that energy when you could be spending all that energy lengthening your own? So, you know, it just drives me insane when people got to complain about other people or if I see that person at such and such event, I'm just going to kick his ass and this and that. And it's like, and what's that going to prove? It's going to prove that you're being an idiot at an event, you know? And it's like, oh my gosh.
And what I don't say on that, on those notes, is, you know, it doesn't matter if someone's a, you know, you look at a person's skill. You look at how many weapons they know how to use, how much knowledge they have. You know, if they have a humongous wealth of knowledge, like I've shown to my students, because I've had students question me on if I'm real or not, so I throw them some stuff out there that they've never seen before. You know, I'm dealing with ninjas. You're like, well, I've never seen anything like that before in Bujikan or this style or that style, you know, so that this spells their questions on it because I'm answering it for them. But that aside is I don't care if you're a white belt, black belt, grandmaster, or whatever. You all have something that you can learn from each other because part of being an instructor is not to have an ego where I know everything. You know, because you gotta do that. Your students, and my students, and I tell my students all the time, you guys teach me things just like I teach you. You know?
Right.
One of the biggest things that I learned that I try to spread to my students, one of the things I learned off of them is to be humble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they come to me with techniques, not to be honest, ask me if this is a good technique or whatnot. And, you know, and it's a technique that I've never seen before, and sometimes I'm asked, and I say, well, you got to tweak this here a little bit there and a little bit there, and then you got a pretty good technique. And I love it, you know, because they will come up with ideas and whatnot, or they will have knowledge from previous styles. So I'm learning off of them, and that's where the humbleness comes in. And so it doesn't matter what belt you are or even if you have a belt. Your belt could be a black belt made of leather that holds your pants up. You still have something to... I mean, I used to go to the VA hospital. When I lived in Boise, Idaho, I used to go to the VA hospital when I was in my 20s to hang out with the World War II veterans because they have so much history that they would love to pass on to people, to the next generation and the following generation. But people don't, the young generations just don't want to listen. And that's what these trolls do is they don't want to listen. They just want to yak their lips, make themselves look big, when they're missing so much in life. I mean, I feel that we should all pay attention to each other, no matter what the age group is. Don't look at a person because they're disabled and in a wheelchair and got cerebral palsy, whatever. that person who can't move a single finger in his body, but still able to use his lips, has knowledge to pass on to you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, absolutely. There is this guy, his name is Steve Rusty Maddie, up in 29 Palms. Not a martial artist, but he's a warrior, a true warrior. He has two purple hearts. When this man talks, I listen. I sit there and hear his stories, and it's just the generations of today, they don't know when to listen. They don't know when to talk. They don't know when to shut up.
Yeah.
They just know how to run their mouth. And, you know, my point, and Rusty and I have discussed this at length, just be honest. You know, your title should not be more than two or three syllables long. Not Sophie, Grandmaster, Professor, Doctor. Screw that.
Yeah.
You know, don't expect me to call you Grandmaster because you're not my Grandmaster.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can
that's the thing.
It's like
respectful, though.
And that's the thing. There is, you know, using the title in a respectful manner, and then there's, like, you know, the people that will demand that you call them Soke, Hanchi, Shihan, Doctor, Professor, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, I have a hard time to this day when people call me, Grandmaster or Master or Sensei.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sensei, you know, translated from Japanese to English, being teacher. And, you know, respectfully, I am a teacher, but respectfully, everyone in life is a teacher. You know, even the smallest details have something to offer in knowledge. I still have a hard time when people call me Grandmaster or Master or Sensei.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I would still, you know, I'll tell them, just call me Dan. And they will, my students or people that I don't even know that know who I am will tune on and say, no, that's disrespectful. I got to call you Master Harmon or whatever. And I'm just like, okay. You know, even though I asked them to call me Dan, they still call me that. You know, I do see it as a sign of respect, as, you know, like my fiance just said, it's a sign of respect. But, you know, the title, you know, I really never cared for titles. I never did. And because, you know, when I was a kid, I found that I was smarter than my own adopted parents. Me and my mom used to get in debate about history. You know, about American history. And look in the book. You'll see. I'm right. And then she'd get angry because I was right. And what was sad is at that time, I didn't even know how to read. But I was still right because I was smart enough to have people read history books to me. And I was full of knowledge. Now, those that are tuning around don't have the knowledge to be holding the title Grandmaster or master or sensei or dojo, then I agree with him that is disrespectful to the art, whatever art it may be. If you're going to claim to be something, then study in it. Spend your life, absorb your life into it so that you can have that knowledge, so that you can turn around when someone questions you and says, well, How are you considered a grandmaster? You can demonstrate. You can prove it through demonstration.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I agree with him on that. I agree with him. I mean, I get people that call me a fake all the time, but those people that call me a fake, if they would just sit down, shut up, pay attention, and see how much knowledge I have in my brain, they would see that I have an extraordinary amount of knowledge in my brain on ninjutsu.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of times people are also threatened when people think that their own status, is going to be quote unquote in jeopardy. So I don't see what the big problem is within the ninjutsu thing. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, if these other people that are calling you out had any pride in preserving the culture behind ninjutsu and preserving the art, you would think that they would be celebrating that there are other people passing on, you know, the arts, regardless of the style of ninjutsu, right? But instead, these people had made the choice to get on your butt and try to, like, call you out. And and just be jerks about it. And that's it just says so much about, you know, them as a teacher, them as a martial artist. And it doesn't make ninjutsu look all that great when they're doing that. And that's the kicker. Now, Bob, just out of curiosity, now how did Soke Greg, you know, find out that, like, all these politic and things, people are pulling us in, you know, did he find it off of Facebook? Did he hear from other people? I mean, how did that work, Bob?
He did. He found it on Facebook because people were whining. And that has always pissed me off, too. It's like, grow the hell up, people. Don't be talking smack about other people, because there's one artist in the community that has upset quite a few people. In fact, he was at an event last weekend, and this one gentleman walked in, and there was a rumor that there was going to be problems, but this gentleman who walked into the event didn't do anything, but they called the police. There was no imminent threat, but they called the police on this guy. And I was like,
wow.
What did you do? And he said, I didn't do anything. I just walked in.
Wow. That's
But that's how they are. They're keyboard warriors. They'll talk smack over the phone. They'll talk smack over the keyboard. You get in front of them, they're on 911.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, the same guy threatened restraining orders and all this crap. It's like, you know what? If you're not going to put up, you better just shut your mouth.
That's right.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly. Well, you know, I wish we could talk about this a little bit more, because it's always so therapeutic to rant about stuff.
Yeah, just
because,
to get stuff out. Yes, absolutely.
Just to get stuff out, because this is what, you know, at least, you know, us as martial art teachers, and I know there are martial art teachers out there that know exactly what we're talking about. You know, it's just something that we deal with, you know, on a day-to-day basis, being teachers and being out there. And we have to just keep it in and just keep the ball rolling, passing on the arts that we choose to pass on. And just sometimes it's just great to rant about it. So thank you so much, Grandmaster Harmon, for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to talk to you in person, as well as seeing you on Facebook. And it looks like a lot of our listeners were out of commission today. Even our regular listener, Deb wasn't on today. So, I was really hoping we would get callers just to, like, you know, rant about stuff, or, you know, talk great stuff about other stuff. But I guess everyone's out. At least here in Seattle, it's sunny, you know, and summer in Seattle is always something where there's nobody home. I think I'm one of the only people home on a sunny Seattle evening in the summer, right, where it's actually like in the 80s and stuff like that. So, but anyway, it's all good. It's all good.
Right, right.
So,
well, next week, hopefully I'll get that list from the Masters, and we'll actually have a couple of inductees next week. They keep threatening they're going to send me the list, but still haven't. So we'll see about next week.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll have some, hopefully we'll get some guests on that. So very cool. All right, well thank you again, Grandmaster Dan, and thank you again every week, Sifu Bob, for being a great co-host. And thank you, listeners, that will be listening archived, apparently, because we didn't have any. It didn't look like we had very many people listening. I don't know. There might have been live people, but I sure didn't see anybody. So, so with the last 90 seconds left in our broadcast, I just want to say have a great rest of the weekend and have a very safe 4th of July. Bye, everyone. Have a great evening.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.